Welcome back to Believe in Rams. I'm Jake Ellenbogen. He is Cameron Lynch. And soon we will have Marshall Faulk coming on the show. Rams legendary Hall of Fame running back with the greatest show on turf. He also played with the Colts, but you guys don't really care about that because this is not Believe in Colts now, is it? So before we can get into that, Cam, just want to let you guys know that Bet Online is your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. Bet Online continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use our promo code BELIEVE to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. But Cam, where can people start if they don't necessarily want to do that, but they want to do pick 'em? They want to play fantasy football. Where are they going, my guy?
Yes, they can go to Underdog Fantasy, Jake. You can start playing fantasy football with Underdog Fantasy today. Users will receive 100% deposit match up to $100. They use our promo code OTE at sign up. You can click the link in the description to get started today.
Today. Do it now. No, I'm kidding. But anyway, we got Marshall Faulk coming up. Stick with us. After the interview, we will be talking about the Rams in 40. It is Niners week, guys. It's Niners week. So we got to preview that game. That's a big rivalry game. So without further ado, here is Marshall Faulk. All right, guys, welcome back. Believe in Rams. We're joined by the legendary running back, Marshall Faulk. How you doing, Marshall?
Doing good. How you guys doing, man?
We're good. We're happy to talk with you, man.
Right on.
All right, so I think a lot of Rams fans want to know, what have you been up to lately?
Oh, man, just enjoying life, enjoying the retired life, raising kids and trying to be the best father and just – trying to keep up with football. I mean, it's just, there's so many, you know, it's like the further you get out, there's so many new names, new guys, so much turnover on teams as we're seeing with the Rams. You gotta, with fantasy football, you know, you find yourself in like 3 to 4 leagues. You're like, oh my God, I didn't know that guy played for this team.
Yeah.
It is. Literally, yeah. It happened to me the other night. I'm watching. I didn't know Leonard Floyd went to Buffalo. I was like, man, I didn't even know that. Like, that one got me. I didn't even know.
Yeah. I do the same thing. I think Peyton Manning on the live stream was like, was Zach Wilson on the team? I didn't even realize that. It happens. I get it. I mean, as you know, as a legend, as a former player, once you're outside the club, it's like, oh, it's hard to get in. It's that glass door. But, you know, Marshall, I wanted to ask you, I just want you to take this back a little bit, right? In memory lane, I know you're from Louisiana, but you went to San Diego State. So kind of like the past, we want to talk about the present and the future when it comes to the Rams. But what was that like? It was, you were down south and going to the West Coast. I'm sure it was tough. So I'm really curious what that was like for you.
It was literally a culture shock. You know, serious. I mean, I couldn't find a good taco. We didn't really eat Taco Bell much in New Orleans, and all of a sudden burritos and taco shops popping up. Right. You know, you go from pool boys and muffaladas and now you it's refried beans and taco shops and you know, like, be the culture shock that it was for me. I went to all black school. You know, yeah. I went to all black schools my whole life, and not only do you find yourself integrated with another race, but San Diego is a melting pot. You know, there's everything there. Yeah, there's all kinds of culture. And it was just, it was different. It was different. And it took me, you know, it took some months. But the one thing that was good was where football is in the locker room, you know, race, religion, and all of that stuff. All of that is just out the door.
Yeah.
We're on one team and none of that matters. And sports has a way of connecting us. And it literally gave me those adjustment moments that helped me adjust in class, that helped me adjust on campus.
That's really nice. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And then I know, too, you know, when you first got drafted, went to the Colts, and then the Rams, what was that like? So you're going from Louisiana to San Diego, and then Indiana, and then St. Louis. Like, what was that like for you?
Another culture shock because, you know, growing up in New Orleans, living in San Diego, you didn't experience winter. And I never lived in the middle of the world. You know, I'm living and all of a sudden this siren goes off. I'm like, what is that? Oh, that's for tornadoes. I'm like, I look, man, I'm not ready for this. I knew hurricanes. I learned about earthquakes, but now we got tornadoes. What's up with this? So you find the littlest things, man. It's I'd never been to a car race. You know, I saw cars racing on the street. To go in and watch all these masses of people pile up in a stadium to watch these cars do laps, 200 freaking laps. I'm like, are you kidding me? After 10 laps, I'm bored. You know, I'm like, right. Where's the fun in this?
Yeah, that's funny.
Just culture, man. All the culture things. It just, you know, it's surprising.
Oh, yeah. Man. Well, speaking of culture, Sean McVay completely changed the culture of this Rams team. And, you know, it's been a blessing, obviously. Any Rams fan would say that. But we recently found out, I know people knew this, but we recently found out with the Pivot podcast, you were the last interview meeting with Sean McVay. So I want to ask you about how that went, first off. And the second thing, did you foresee any of this happening early on with Sean McVay and the career that he would have? And he's still the youngest head coach, after all.
Yeah, great question. And here's, you know, just my respect and appreciation for Stan Kroenke. Stan was like, look, you know, we have some coaches. There's one guy I want you to meet. I want you to, like, really tell me, what do you think? What do you think of this guy? And we like him, but we're not 100% sure yet. And so I sat down, flew up and we had dinner. And everybody left the table, and Sean and I, we was there, and we were just talking ball. And in the sense of not just strategy, but what does it mean to a coach? What does it mean to a player? And for somebody who hadn't played in the NFL, his outlook on it was amazing. Now, the X's and O's, and listen to him talk about, like, the dynamics of year to year, I mean, decade to decade, how the game changed. And I know he wasn't around the game that long, but being a historian of the game is a guy, he goes back and he looks at film and he watches stuff. And listening to him talk about what he saw us do with Mike Martin and all of that. I remember telling, I told Stan, I said, Stan, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. Today, as a head coach, he's not ready. I said, but by the time he is ready, he's not going to be there for you. And that was literally my, like, that the day that he became the Rams head coach, there was some learning that he had to do before he became Sean McVay, the Super Bowl winning head coach. And he, you know, he knew that. And I told him, I said, this guy is going to be somebody to be dealt with. And not only that, when you look at the guys whom have coached underneath him, how quickly he's building a tree. And guys, that is the testament to, like, what you do. And they're not flashes in the pans. Like, I'm talking jobs, they're sticking. You look at Green Bay, you look at Cincinnati, and you look at what's Chargers. Going on in Minnesota. Yeah, the Chargers. Like, it's like guys that they're just not like, oh, they come 1 year, 2 year. And I'm not naming names of other coaches, they've gotten guys jobs, but didn't go well. He's teaching them how to run an organization, how to lead men. And we're different men when you talk about, it's one thing to coach boys in college and lead them. It's another thing to lead men who make more money than you. All right.
That's a good point there. You know, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because it's like, as soon as, like, Todd Gurley called, he came out in 2016. He plays, you know, running back for the Rams at the time. And this organization's had you. He's had Eric Dickerson, Dan Towler. I mean, so many great running backs. And so Todd, coming off his rookie year, has a down year, and he calls it a high school offense. Well, I remember seeing a headline where it was Sean McVay took Todd Gurley in a Jeff Fisher offense as if he was going to be Eddie George, and Sean McVay wanted to turn him into Marshall Faulk. And, like, I saw that and I was like, you know, because Marshall Faulk, like, you were my favorite running back growing up. What did you think about Todd? Because it feel like he was the catalyst to that offense. And I feel like, honestly, when I'm watching him, I'm like, clearly Sean McVay saw a lot of Marshall Faulk, you know, when he was growing up.
Yeah, and listen, Sean wasn't asking him to be me physically, and Sean wasn't asking him to do anything physically like I did. What Sean wanted was mentally for him to be in a space to understand what type of player he was going to need to be the catalyst in this offense and how they were building it. Because they didn't have the components on the outside. They had to do it from the inside out. So first of all, taking care of your body. Second thing is understanding that if this thing is going to run through you, you have to be, your best ability is availability.
Yeah.
You know, because they're counting on you. And it's huge. So mentally, Todd had to get in the frame of, because Todd split time in college. You know, being a bell guy and being a guy is a whole nother thing. When you're the engine, hey, when the engine goes on the sideline, the damn car don't move. All right. So getting him in the right mindset of not like, these are your skill set. We know you can catch the ball. We know how you like to run the ball, but we're going to ask you to do a lot of that because you're going to carry the brunt of this burden until we put some guys around you. That's what he wanted.
Yeah. That's awesome, Marshall. I actually came in the same year that Todd did, with the same year. Of course, he was drafted. I was undrafted. And he was one of my favorite teammates. I'm not going to lie. He was down to earth, a cool cat. And I wanted to ask you, who were some of your favorite teammates and favorite coaches when you were playing? Like, man, I got to get that brother a call because, man, he really helped me out through my career. What did that look like for you?
Yeah. I'm going to say my first head coach, Ted Marchabrota. He used to have a saying, and I find myself saying it all the time to my kids. And when I was a kid in the league, and any time I would mess up or do something, he would say, Marshall, you know, you just don't know what you don't know. And I'm like, it killed me. I never really got it. But once you get older, you look back and you're like, damn, I didn't know. I didn't know. And so now that you know, you wish you knew when you didn't know. But his saying so resonated with me as I got older in the game. So Ted was like a huge influence on me. He was a guy who, the Buffalo Bills, he called plays and created who Thurman Thomas was. You know, it's like he was a guy. He taught me, like, hey, playing in an offense where you catch the ball and run the ball is going to extend your career. Because running backs at that point in time, we were measured by carries. They didn't look at catching balls as like a thing. You know, they didn't. And not until Mike Martin and I got together did we have this thing called touches. It didn't matter how you got it. It's touches, you know. And now for receivers, based on what Deebo Samuels is doing, it's touches. How many times do you touch the ball? That's how you affect the game. My first running backs coach, Gene Huey, the guy coached me harder than my high school coach was a SOB. And he coached us so hard. He was hard on us. I'm talking about so hard. Gene was harder than that. Being a guy who was a rookie, and I was like a huge part of the offense as a rookie, I'm talking week 12, he's still getting on me about like making sure I'm at 6.5 yards deep. Seven means run. 6.5 could be pass and run. Like making me pay attention to detail even when I was tired. It really carried on to later in my career. And obviously I got Wilbur Montgomery when I got there, Mike Martz, being with him. It was just so much fun. Having a Henry Eller, the guy who was a Rams legend, be the receivers coach as well, hearing the old stories of what it was like back then, having Jack Snow around. And Jack was the broadcaster, but he was like a coach too, because we everybody loved Jack Snow. Jack Snow was like a guy. Talking offensive line with a Jim Hanifin, legendary guy who helped build the Hogs, talking blocking scheme, learning calls of the offensive linemen and how they were blocking, and being able to talk the jargon with an actual offensive line coach and understanding how patient I needed to be for the offensive line, giving them a chance to make their blocks. Just so many guys, man. So many guys.
No, that's awesome. And speaking of so many guys, it feels like there's so many guys in this Rams running back room that could do something. You know, you got Cam Akers, you got Kyren Williams, Ronnie Rivers had a great preseason, and Zach Evans for the future. What are your thoughts on this Rams running back room right now?
Here's what I'm going to say this. And I was never a guy who was big on sharing the backfield. I hated it. You know, I wanted to play whole games. I wanted all the damn touches. That was that. And this is where the whole league has gone with, you know, having multiple guys. And the league is adapting to college. If in college, if you're not the main guy, you're not carrying the ball or touching the ball 30 to 40 times a game, you're not coming to the next level and doing it. So what they figure out is we got to have multiple backs. Now, I like our backs. I think they're interchangeable. I think they all bring something to the table. But what I notice is they all do a lot of the same things. So when they're in there, the whole playbook is open and it's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. I agree with that. I mean, Kyren Williams had himself a game, and I don't think we were really expecting him to find the end zone twice to open up the season. But I got to ask you, because people want to know, you know, you came from the Colts, you went to the Rams traded Dickerson to the Colts. Jonathan Taylor, could you see something, somebody like that come into the Rams near the trade deadline or even before then?
You know, I don't think the Rams is willing to mortgage or leverage any more of the future. We as an organization, we need those picks because we're going to, like, within the next, obviously, I'll be honest, I the Rams took the field. I was like, okay, let's see. I was, because the preseason don't tell me nothing anymore. I was just like, let's see what the line looks like. Let's see defensively what this secondary looks like. There's just so many new faces. So what we have to do is, because what we did in order to win the Super Bowl, and hey, we won it at home, which, you know, it hadn't been done. What we did and how we did it, we gave up a lot to do it. So now we have to make sure we hold on to some of these picks so we can not be in rebuilding, but surround ourselves with some young talent so we can remain competitive and get a shot at the playoffs. Because once you get in the playoffs, at that point in time, it don't matter if you're a rookie or not. You got some games under your belt. You got 17 games under your belt, and you understand what this league is about.
Yeah, yeah. And Marshall, before we let you go here, I agree with you. We got to make it to the dance, right? Anybody can win at that point. And I want to ask you, kind of take us back a little bit again. You know, on the Knuckleheads podcast on Players Tribune, they always ask, who was the first person to bust your ass? I'm not going to ask you that. I'm curious, when it comes to the 49ers, the Seattle Seahawks, who was the player that you used to get on, or the person that you left their ankles back in the locker room because you shook them so bad? What did that look like for you?
Shook him so bad. You know what? That would be easy. But I'm gonna tell you guys, playing against the 49ers, you know, young in my days when Ronnie Lott was still around, and Ronnie Lott had a reputation. This was like the old Ronnie Lott. Man, I'm talking about, you want to talk about bring the wood, and back then you could lay it. So yeah. Ronnie Lott was a guy that I wanted to make sure, and I looked him up. I made sure I didn't give him a free hit. Wasn't no testing him. His ability to do what he did, his reputation preceded him, and I gave him the respect that he deserved.
Respect.
That's awesome, Marshall. Hey, we really appreciate you taking the time. We'd love to have you back, and hopefully, you know, we're talking about a potential playoff team here with the Rams. They look good week one. We'll see what happens. But, guys, that's going to do it. Marshall, again, thank you so much. This has been Believe in Rams. All right, guys. So that was Marshall Faulk. It was a pleasure to interview him. Honestly, it was cool to have a Hall of Famer on there. Somebody I grew up watching. I will admit I wore his jersey until the number literally just fell off my back as a kid. So big fan of him and just everything he accomplished and watching him number 28. But now moving on to the 49ers, man. This game is big because it is the Rams and Niners. Any year it would be big. They've lost 8 straight to the 49ers. Now 8 straight regular season games. Of course, they won one in there that kind of mattered more than all the others.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. just a little bit more than the others. But Cam, there's a renewed, I feel like people are way more confident in this game. I can't really put my mind as to why. I was told that they were tanking. They weren't going to beat Seattle, and then they dropped a 30 burger on Seattle without Cooper Kupp. Yeah. You know, and it's like, huh?
30 piece chicken nugget on them, man. Just dropped it on them. Held Geno to about 100 yards passing or so.
12 yards in the second half.
Come on, fam. Raheem Morris. We talk about it, put respect on his name, and they're showing up, Jake. They're showing up. Aaron Donald's back, Jake. Come on, man. Geno's yelling, "Oh God!" in the pocket. I think now Brock Purdy. I have a feeling, Jake, Brock Purdy going to see that same clip and be like, "Guys, can you please just block Aaron?" just make sure that I have a clean pocket so I can throw to Brandon Ayuk or Christian McCaffrey. But too bad. Byron Young's playing ball. Aaron Donald's playing ball. So 49ers, Jake, have a full slate ahead of them. They have a full slate, and I do believe it'll be a close game.
So I have a bold prediction for this game. You ready for this? Purdy is going to take a dollar bill and $100 bill, and he's going to slide it over to the audio guy on the field and say, please do not have that. The same thing that happened with Geno. Please do not put that out there, you know, for everyone to see it. Cause I'm going to scream my lungs out when I see Aaron Dahl for the first time. So please make sure that doesn't happen. No, with all due respect to Purdy, like he looks really good and he's coming off a really good game against the Steelers. And, you know, Cam, I got to say, Micah Parsons, I feel like nailed it with him. Okay. Parsons said it. I forget. It was maybe his podcast, someone else's podcast, but he said, I don't know if you saw the clip, but he was basically like, look, Brock Purdy he's him. Like we're on notice. Like people, like you got to play against Brock Purdy. Like he's a good player. However, the one thing that I have yet to see from Brock Purdy is playing through adversity. Because this team's always leading. So this is an opportunity here to find out about Brock Purdy, to put him through the ringer, because everyone talks about the Rams had never seen Brock Purdy before. Brock Purdy's never seen the Rams before. Brock Purdy's never seen AD before, okay? Brock Purdy saw the Big 12, and he's played 7 games in the NFL as a starter. Mm-hmm. He has not seen Aaron Donald.
But bro, I would say this, Jake. Brock Purdy got some swag, my man. The way he was talking about Pat P in that presser, bro. Like, mind you, Jake, Pat P's in the Hall of Famer. I think Ryan Clark might have said it. Pat P's the nicest guy you can think of. But I think they were going back and forth a little bit. And Brock Purdy and Brandon Ayuk put that work on Patrick Peterson. So, Jake, our guy, Darion Kendrick, he has his work set out for him. He's going to have a long day. I know Brock Purdy's looking at him. He saw that DJ Metcalf sluggo, that 1-2 touchdown against Seattle. So, Darion Kendrick, get ready to go. I think less smack talk, the better, because Patrick Peterson did it and didn't work out too well for him. So, it's going to be a matchup.
Man, I got to ask you, Cam, as a former player here, I mean, maybe it's just me. Maybe I don't have that competitive fire. I mean, I'm shutting my mouth. Like, I'm not putting out any bulletin board material. What about you? And, like, when you were on the Rams, did anybody feel like kind of give you that, like, uncomfortable feeling like you were that guy in the corner? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I think of an exact play. It was actually myself, Jake. I'm talking to Brent Grimes. And mind you, Brent Grimes is playing defense. I think the offense is out in the field. James is out there doing his thing, either throwing an interception or throwing a touchdown. One of the two, no big deal. But, no, James is a beast. But Brent Grimes, I go to Brent Grimes. I'm like, yo, bro, I'm about to go block this punt. I'm about to go do something or make this tackle. I was like, I'm about to go do something insane.
Oh, no.
And when I get out on the field, Of course, it's like a muffled play. I think it might have been the play that Taysom Hill maybe blocked the punt we were playing the Saints, but I got myself into that position where I'm like, I'm about to do this and do that, and it backfired on me. So what I started doing, Jake, I started telling myself silently, like, okay, Cam, go ahead and get this done. Kind of like what Aaron Donald said to himself when they were playing the Bengals versus Joe Burrow. He's like, they got to make a play, got to make a play, and he did, got that sack fumble. So I did it before, it backfired, but when it comes to Brock Purdy, I'll keep my mouth a little quiet there and just lock in on what I got to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the bulletin board, and you didn't do anything wrong. It's not like you came out and be like, yeah, dude, like Taysom Hill's trash, bro. Like, you know, that's why I'm like, I'm keeping my mouth shut. Why am I giving him any sort of, I mean, remember Torrey Smith, like when he came in the NFL, he like was just this speed guy. He had 3 touchdowns. I think he went over 300 yards receiving. He had like 4 catches in that game. Okay, like guys can have that type of game that comes out of nowhere, and you don't want to be the reason they're having that type of game. And you could say, oh yeah, that's not likely, you know, that's unheard of to act like players are going to play harder, because don't knock it. Okay, not everybody plays football because they love it, they're good at it. So if you have those guys that don't have that passion, and then all of a sudden you go after, say, like Jalen was going after people's like No, I think it was Janoris Jenkins was like going after people's like moms and stuff and saying like, yeah, like this and that. Like now all of a sudden you're talking to players who, I'm not saying everybody's like this, but Cam, I know you can mention, not by name, but I know a few people that played football because they were good at it, but not because they loved it. And it's like, you don't want to get that passion in them. Because like if that guy's like, I'm going to work, I'm going to collect my paycheck, I might have a good game, I might have a bad game, doesn't matter, I'm getting paid. And then you say something about his mom, he's coming at you now. You've woken Jake, up the bear.
Jake, it's hilarious you say that because some guys make it up. Jake, some guys make it up that their opponent, the person across from them, is talking about their mom crazy or X, Y, and Z. They make this stuff up. And I'm not going to lie, sometimes I would make some stuff up. Like, okay, I got to be in this character. It's funny because Brian Dawkins used to do it, right? He had like his Wolverine character. So I had to make up this alternative character when I stepped on that football field. So you're right, Jake. Those haters can fuel you, and you got to be careful who you're hating on when it comes to the game of football.
This is very true because, man, it's just you never know what kind of animal that you can unleash. Everyone's good in the NFL. You know, everyone can have a game. I remember people laughed at Chuck Pagano because, you know, and I'm sure you probably saw this years ago. He was in a presser, and they're like, who are you most keying in on against this Rams team? And he said, Tavon Austin. And they're like, Tavon Austin? Like, he hasn't done anything. He's like, Tavon Austin scares me. Tavon Austin could destroy our day. And sure enough, that was Tavon Austin's career game. He had like 3 touchdowns in that game. And then afterwards, it's like, I told you. Like, I freaking told you I was worried about Tavon Austin. I knew there was something up there. And so, yeah, you know, just to make a long story short, and obviously we dragged that on a little bit too long, but you get the point, is that basically you and I have the same sentiment. I'm not putting out billboard material. Did Patrick Peterson curse the entire Steelers team last week? Probably not. I think they all look kind of flat. It just looked like a bad game. It happens. The 49ers will probably have a bad game week 12. Probably not now, but like, it, you know, every team is going to have one of those stinkers. You know what I mean? Where you just, nothing goes right. Steelers have one week 1. It's okay. You move on. But this game, I want everybody to keep their mouth shut. You don't want to give, like, to your point, you don't want to give Brock Purdy, who's got this swag, who takes it seriously, like, you don't want to give him any bulletin board material. Doesn't seem like that's happened. However, it has happened before. Aaron Donald saying who in regards to Debo. And, you know, obviously Debo will never let that go. He's been on multiple podcasts. Yeah. He said, man, I despise the Rams. I hate the Rams. And I mean, the Niners, like, you know, you see Aaron Donald before the game. He's like, I don't like the Niners. I really dislike them guys. Like, it's just like, he just goes in on them. It's like, you know.
Yeah, I played for the Rams, and every lineup against the 49ers, it was a shootout, Jake. The 49ers, we used to battle with those guys, and I totally get it. I'm with Aaron, to be honest. We do have another show off the edge where we cover multiple teams, so, you know, I have to figure out how to temper that. But when it comes to the 49ers, man, I get geared up. And, Jake, one thing I do want to say about the 49ers, last week against the Steelers, Debo Samuels and George Kittle, they were a little bit quiet last week. So I do know this is Rams week for them and that they're going to be gearing up. So if I am Raheem Morris, I'm like, look, guys, Brandon Ayuk went off last year. Last week, they're going to expect us to double team him. And, oh, that's now the guy. But let's not forget about Debo Samuels. Let's not forget about Kittle, because Kittle was 3 for 6 for only 19 yards. I think Debo was 5 for 7 for only 55. So I guarantee you Brock Purdy's like, you know what, guys, I didn't really get you the ball like that, but this week I got you. So lock in for those guys for sure.
Yeah, and it's one of those games where it's hard to gauge. Like, I don't look at targets. I don't take it seriously. They were up 28-7. I mean, Brock Purdy's not heaving it down the field because he doesn't have to. They're playing ball control at that point, just trying to run out the clock, avoid the injuries. You know, I saw it, like, Trent Williams came off the field. So, like, you know, you want to make sure that you finish. You've got the win in the bag. Let's make sure we come out unscathed at that point. And it's hard to do when you're playing a sport like that. I know that. But looking at the Rams, you know, I think keys to beat the Niners. It's important to realize, you know, we talked about the summary. Cam, the Seahawks didn't care. They didn't, like, just Pete Carroll's reaction. It's honestly disrespectful to the Seattle fans. I'd be upset if I was a Seattle fan. Like, you could say Sean McVay coached a clinic, and he did. But Pete Carroll was so unprepared. His team was unprepared. And it just didn't even seem like he like took them seriously. It's like, again, yeah. I don't want to sound like a boomer, and I've already said this on another show. I don't want to sound like a boomer, but like I felt like they were looking at the press clippings, like, oh, Cup's out, this team's tanking. Like, you know, they're in Caleb Williams mode. We're going to the Super Bowl. You know, we're just gonna coast. And the Rams came in to Lumen Stadium and shut them up. This week, they're at home. So the Rams get to take that momentum. They won on the road. You know, first, you know, win, you know, week one. Sean McVay, I believe, is 6-1 in week one games, only losing last year against Buffalo. They're back at SoFi. So this is their stomping grounds. And the 49ers call it Levi South. That's got it. That's going to irk the hell out of you, you know?
Yeah. And the stadium just got built, Jake. So I can't, I don't like that at all.
Well, I don't like it at all because I'm just going to, I don't care. Like, if this gets me in trouble, I'm just going to say it. Levi Stadium is the most generic stadium ever. Okay.
Oh.
Like I don't care. Like, SoFi is a world-class stadium. Don't you ever compare Levi in any sense to SoFi Stadium. Levi South, like, to me, calling it that, like, Levi Stadium is like if Dean Spanos had to, like, come up with a stadium plan, that's what he would do because he doesn't have the money to be an owner in this league. So that's where that's where we're at right there, right?
So, yes, and so to be fair, SoFi does look like it's a ship in Star Wars. So if folks, if folks have not been to SoFi yet, that stadium is insane, by the way. So
I haven't
check
been
it
there.
Out if you can. Check it out if you can because SoFi is impeccable.
Well, hopefully I'll be there with you next time.
There you go.
But yeah, sorry, sticking to the actual game here because like we've just been going.
we're getting in. I mean, this is a rivalry, man. This is 49ers and Rams, so it gets a little hot and spicy.
It does. Well, so Seattle, their game was essentially last week. We talked about it. We're not going to let the Rams throw the ball. They didn't buy into the Rams passing attack without Cooper Kupp. They sadly were mistaken. And they did stop the run. Because they sold out to stop the run. The 49ers, it's hard to run against regardless if they're going to sell out and load the box or not. They're just really good all over the place. And while Brock Purdy can get everything over the middle, it seems like, and he can connect with a Debo, you know, a quick slant over the middle or an Ayuk or a Kittle,
you can't
do that against the 49ers because they got the nastiest linebacker tandem right now, athleticism and just tenacity and physicality in range in Fred Warner and, of course, Dre Greenlaw. And so, you know, I think that kind of limits what the Rams can do with, you know, somebody like Tyler Higbee and Puka Nacua. You know, I think they might have to get creative.
But not Tutu, though. If you get Tutu on those guys.
You. Exactly. The key to this game is Tutu Atwell. If you remember in the NFC title game, they tried to, you know, connect deep with Odell Beckham Jr. They had Ben Skoranek and he dropped it wide open the end zone. So they are going to have to spread out. They're going to have to stretch out this defense. They're going to have to really make them defend it. And here's the thing. Once they start actually selling out to stop Tutu, and this is why this you can literally beat any defense in this league. You could beat any defense. You could beat any offense. This is the beauty of football. But are you actually going to step up and do it? And so Tutu Atwell, to your point, can stretch the field and be like, oh, well, Jake, what if they take it away? Well, great. So now something is open. Whether that's Puka Nacua, whether Van Jefferson has to step up, whether it's Bryson Hopkins, Tyler Higbee, or maybe it's Cam Akers or Kyron Williams out of the backfield, pass catcher or runner, something opens up if you make an adjustment to stop Tutu.
Yeah, and Jake, I would love to see this because Kyle Juszczyk is the fullback for the 49ers, and I would love to see Ben Skoranek come to the backfield for the Rams, right, and cause that mismatch with
A
lead play for Fred Warner. Fred Warner's going to come downhill. Trey Greenlaw's going to come around and wrap or do whatever he needs to do. But then when that happens, those guys kind of break out and get to their pass mode. But I would like to see some mismatches because one thing I did see the other week with Fred Warner, my guy runs to the ball. If it's in front of him, Jake, he's going to diagnose it before it even happens. So with guys like that, guys like Luke Kuechly, you know, guys that are really cerebral when it comes to the game of football, you got to figure out how to tire them out, wear them down, Jake. And I do think with that run game, that play action pass, we're going to have to pound the football and then also get some passes going out of that and maybe even spread the field. You just talked about it. Maybe getting Kyron Williams out there in the slot, one-on-one with Greenlaw and Fred Warner to wear those guys down. Tutu Atwell, line him up in the slot. If they have man coverage or some type of zone coverage against him, you know, frustrate them a little bit and run the ball at him. But you got to wear those two guys down the middle, Jake, because if not, it is going to be a long day for the Rams team. And, Jake, one thing I do know, Tyler Higbee matched up against those guys. I think we can get it done, Jake. If Tyler Higbee can go to work on Greenlaw specifically, yeah, I think we'll be all right. Fred Warner, on the other hand, we got to figure him out, Jake, because he's looking like the number one linebacker in the league, and it's spooky. So how are we gonna get over top of him? How are we gonna figure him out? I think that'll be the best way to defeat that 49ers team for sure.
That's not even the guy I'm most worried about. It's Christian McCaffrey. The guy had the quietest 152-yard game I've ever seen. I mean, I was like, wait, he has 100. Are you freaking serious right now? Like, yeah. he is. I mean, I said it. He's thick with two C's, man. He is hard to bring down. You know, And the thing is, they have that wide zone, the outside zone runs. And it's like, man, that's exactly what you want to run against this Rams inexperienced edge room. Because it's like, even if you set the edge, this guy's thick with two C's. He's going to break the tackle. But like, you know, Michael Hoyt, like, I don't feel great about Michael Hoyt setting that edge there.
It's just, it's a really a discipline thing, Jake, right? Darion Kendrick, there was a play with Byron Young when it was Walker. He got outside, got on the edge of the defense, and Christian is looking at that, Jake. And so what these guys have to do, they're going to have to play disciplined football with Christian McCaffrey. It's almost like trying to capture a rabbit, right? Having guys on this side, on this side, on this side, on this side, and it's like, hey, if Christian goes this way, don't retreat and go that way. Stay on your side because he's going to come back. He's going to figure it out. He's going to find that hole. So disciplined football by the anchors of this defense, I think will be excellent, and it'll be the key to keeping Christian McCaffrey confined here.
Absolutely agree. I really just don't think they have a choice. They have to contain Christian McCaffrey if they want to win this football game. But another thing is, I think you nailed it earlier. You know, I think actually the X factor of this game, and we didn't see it, and I think we didn't see it for a reason last week, was Ben Skowronek. I think they're keeping him under wraps. I think they want to roll that out this week because they want that physicality. It's going to be a physical game. And I think with Ben Skowronek's receiving ability, he is the use check for this Rams offense. And it sounds weird. It's like, man, we got Tutu Atwell, 119 yards. Everyone and their mother's talking about Puka Nacua today and tomorrow and the yesterday. You know, and then you have, you know, Van Jefferson, who had 800 yards in his second season, and people are just completely, you know, dismissing after one game. You have Tyler Higbee, who's the greatest tight end in Rams history, regardless of how you feel, it's true. So it's like you have these weapons. Kyren Williams coming off a 2-touchdown, should have been a 3-touchdown performance. Akers finds the, you know, pay dirt. And here we are. We're like, Ben Skowronek could be the reason they win this game.
Yeah, I think so too. And on the other side, Jake, Brandon Ayuk, I mean, he went off last week. We all know that. We're going to have to keep him in check. But then also, you talked about Tyler Higbee being the greatest tight end for the Rams. Kittle, like I'm saying, Jake, I'm saying over and over again, but our guys from the Rams are going to have to lock him down. Him and Christian McCaffrey, Jake, all week. And hopefully the Rams also think about a spy as well, a lot more nickel defense, and seeing what that looks like, because we're gonna have to spy Christian McCaffrey. We're gonna have to keep an eye out for Deebo Samuels, maybe even Brandon Ayuk. So maybe taking one guy off that line of scrimmage and adding an extra defender to cover in space is gonna be a bit important.
And I don't know if Christian Roseboom is gonna be enough for this defense. Like, they might have to play Quentin Lake exclusively at linebacker this week to, you know, add some more athleticism. You know, I like Roseboom. He's not fast enough, you know, against this defense. And another thing I'm going to say here is he didn't play last week and people like raised eyebrows. But John Johnson, man, like John Johnson III, I'm putting him on George Kittle like in the good old days where, you know, he challenged Kittle. And then who was challenging George Kittle after when he left? I mean, you know, to be fair, Jordan Fuller, you know, broke his ankle right before the playoff game. So they didn't have him against Kittle in the playoff game. But, you know, I feel like Russ Yeast could have an opportunity, but I feel like the best matchup is probably John Johnson.
He's going to have to play in the box, Jake. A little extra squats this week. He's going to have to defend the run. That's the only thing.
Which makes me wonder. It makes me go back to Skowronek didn't get a ton of snaps. John Johnson got no snaps on the defense. Chestnut checkers, Cam. Maybe, ready for this? The Seattle Seahawks didn't take the Rams seriously, but maybe the Rams took Seattle seriously enough, but was like, you know what? I don't think we need to use John Johnson. We're going to beat them. We don't even need to, we don't need to use John Johnson. We don't need to use Ben Skoranek at the fullback. We don't want to put any of that tape out there. Let them watch tape last year. You know,
yeah.
We don't want to give them any idea.
Yeah. Yeah, we got the big dogs on campus coming up, so we got to save all of our stuff for them because we remember what they did to us last year and whatnot these past couple games. So, Jake, I'm getting more excited. Actually, now that you brought that up, I'm getting more excited.
How about that?
I'm looking forward to this matchup.
You did that. That was on you. You were the one that like sparked because then my gear started turning when you brought up Skoranek, and I was like, wait a minute, John Johnson. Like, you ever see those TikToks with like the Incredibles, like the sinister music in the background? That's how I felt. It's like those gears were turning. I got the sinister music going on. I'm like, oh my God, I figured it out.
Yeah, man. It's gonna be a great week. And also too, Jake, I'm looking forward to on special teams. The Rams, another key to victory is special teams. The Rams are gonna have to show up and show out. Had a blocked field goal last week. And that wasn't the move, Jake. You can't have that week one. So now every team is going to lick their chops, right? The 49ers are like, look, guys, anytime the field goal unit comes out or extra point unit comes out, we're going to get a block this week. So they're going to have to tighten up there, and we're going to have to see our guys show up, right? Kyron Williams will be returning some of those punts, kickoff returns. So hopefully he can find some explosiveness there. But special teams have to show up this week as well.
Yeah, I think – when you look at just everything going on, you know, with the special teams, all of that, essentially, you know, you look at all of that. Essentially, I don't want Kyron to be on the special teams unit. That's what I'm saying.
Makes you a little nervous.
Yeah, I don't want him to be on the special teams unit. I think at the end of the day, if he's going to start, I have the same feeling I had when Antonio Brown was on the special teams. He's the best receiver in the league at this point with the Steelers, the Killer Bees, and you got him out there returning punts. And think about this. This guy is roasting these guys, and they're going on special teams, and they're like, man, I might take a shot at his knee, you know?
It's an extra, but to be fair, Jake, it's an extra offensive play, right? So when you have the best player on your team, like a Tyreek Hill, I think Jalen Ramsey was talking mess about Tyreek Hill when he first came in. Oh, he's just a returner, X, Y, and Z. But that strikes fear in people's heart, Jake. Like DeSean Jackson, I was playing for the Buccaneers. We would put DeSean Jackson back there and be like, hey, we need a win, or we need a touchdown, or we need something. Put DeSean back there. So it's like a dangerous factor. So to be honest, if the Rams put Tutu Atwell back there, Jake, people are going to be like, oh, snap. On the punt team, they're going to be like, hey, let's – you go here, I go here, and don't move. Same thing with Christian McCaffrey. When you got somebody dangerous back there on punt, you're like, hey, you hold your ground, hold your anchor, because if you come this way, that guy's going to start over here and then find that hole that you left. So I see what you're saying, but then also it kind of strikes fear in people's hearts a little bit. So, you know, it's a fine balance.
Absolutely. Well, with that said, we're going to wrap it up here. What's your final score? Do you have a final score prediction, Cam?
Final score, Jake, I think it's the way that Raheem Morris had that defense plan. I'm going to call 24-21 Rams. They win by three and call it a day.
Okay. I like it. I hope it happens because I got 28-24 49ers. I think this is one of those games where everyone wants to win this game. This is not a game I expected them to win even before the season. I am going to the playoffs. So I think this is one of those ones where you have your peaks, you have your valleys. And at the end of the day, I think this is a game where we will see some improvement in certain areas. I think we'll see some good things. After this game, we'll feel justified in believing in the Rams, regardless of the win or loss, because I think it'll be a competitive loss. I just don't trust them. This young defense, they didn't, like we talked about Brock Purdy not battling adversity. This young defense didn't have to battle adversity last week. There was no late game situations. So I don't trust them in a late game situation until they face that. I don't trust them against Christian McCaffrey. I think this is a game where the Rams could be winning late and Christian McCaffrey is just running out the clock. First down, first down, first down, yeah. And they can't stop him. And then, you know, they get a touchdown out of it, down 24-21. 49ers go down the field, get a game winning touchdown. I could see that, you know? And so I think it's not necessarily, I think they like Brock Purdy. Don't get me wrong. But Christian McCaffrey, the Rams haven't been able to stop, period, no matter who's been out there. So a little bit more inexperience. I think it's okay. These growing pains are going to happen. I think we need to be realists here and understand, and that's not me like saying that you're wrong. Just like the people that are like, we're going to go in, we're going to destroy the. You can't expect that. This, it's asking a lot of this yeah. team. And so I think it's definitely the move is to just go in and just realize last week was fun. They kicked the crap out of Seattle. They are a legit football team, but, you know, I don't know if they're going to win this game. I think it's going to be competitive, and that will go a long way towards week three on Monday Night Football against the Bengals. I will say this, though, Cam, if they win this game, we're going to be having a weird, weird, different conversation next week about this team where, hey, man, maybe that 2-0 could turn into 8-0 or 9-0. And then we're talking about maybe a Jonathan Taylor, yeah. depending on the running game, like I brought up to Marshall. Maybe we're talking yeah. about a Brian yeah. Burns. Maybe we're talking about a Chase mm-hmm. Young, somebody that can come in and help this team at an area where maybe they're not as strong at. And maybe, oh, man, maybe we underestimated this team. Maybe the Rams are sitting there. Who knows? But we don't have that conversation. We don't look ahead that far until we see this game and we see where they're at.
And Jake, what I'll say too, before we wrap up, the turnover margin, right? We saw the Cowboys and the Giants game. We did not expect that to happen, but I do think and I do hope that the Rams are saying, hey, to win this football game, guys, we got to start fast and we got to create turnovers. We got to get our offensive football back. Think about how the Jets played, right? The Jets, Jake, had no shot in hell after Aaron Rodgers got hurt.
But that defense.
You always believed in that deep, Jake. That defense stepped up. They stepped up. Jordan Whitehead had three receptions. Those boys had sacks. So the Rams are going to have to take on that same mentality, that same type of heart that the Jets did. Hey, we might be down with our superstar player, Cooper Kupp, whatever that looks like, but we can still show up and show out, Jake. So turnover margin is going to be won by the Rams, and the Rams win by three this weekend.
I like it. Hey, Cam, I'm rooting for you. I never want to be more wrong in my life. It's 49ers week. I'd love for the Rams to win. I'd also love for you guys to subscribe if you haven't already, and also like if you haven't already, and go tell somebody if you haven't already about our show. Appreciate you guys. Appreciate you, Cam. Always a pleasure. Appreciate Marshall Faulk for coming on. It's been a fun show, and man, we're hoping for the best this week. This is going to be... I'm not going to say it's going to be an exciting game because we don't know what game it's going to be with the 49ers. You can never know until it happens. But I'll tell you, if the offensive line stays healthy and they're able to give Stafford and keep his jersey clean, whether that's blue or white or, hell, they break out a black or yellow one, I don't care. I want it to be no scuff marks, clean, and I want the W, but we'll see, man. We'll see.
Yeah.
Man, you know, we appreciate you guys. Be sure to like, subscribe, comment, rate, review, depending on wherever you're consuming this content. And we will find out Sunday what the fate of this team and the 49ers moving into week three. Until next time, guys, I'm Jake Ellenbogen. He's Cameron Lynch. Take it easy. Later, folks. Thanks.